Blog Talk Radio.
Depleting water gon' kill more people than 8Ks. Mess with your mental like watching porn in the 8th grade. Go get a girl, cornbread thick and homemade. We do this for the people suffering and underpaid. 5-year-old boy, 100 pounds overweight. They don't teach us about the credit scores and how they rate. We be boxed on the tables, watch our future fade. Daydreaming in class is what the teacher hate. High problems with anger and can't communicate. Been betrayed by society, so we dominate. Don't tell your mom you're gangbanging, she just want a baby. Maybe we can win a lotto, maybe God will pay me. Turn into a zombie or get caught in a tsunami. Learn about the lessons on talk from Marcus Garvey. It's amazing how the matriarchy took the car keys. I just wanna build, take a trip in the RV. Turn into a zombie or get caught in a tsunami. Learn about the lessons on talk from Marcus Garvey. It's amazing how the matriarchy took the car keys. I just wanna build, take a trip in the RV. Look into the mind of a freeman that had to balance hard to get even. As above, so below is the season. 360 degrees of completion. I wish I could escape to a planet in stellar, cause the planet be small like the mucus of a caterpillar. Still amazed by the gesture, hieroglyphic architecture. Step out of the road, step forth by your oppressor. Pound on the ground like a juggernaut, ego tester. Never wearing polyester, only the finest textures. Egyptian cotton, you're a shepherd, I'm a knotton. I'm the lesson, I eat fools like you for breakfast. Your professor is racist, the land is cultivated, taken siege by a rapist. But you still turn on the TV, watching the Lakers. Money's everything in the eye of the maker. But have the maker try to make a soul, nigga. That's what I thought. First came the thought, and then came the all. And then came my nigga, cause they all wanna ball. Turn into a zombie or get caught in a tsunami. Learn about the lessons on talk from Marcus Garvey. It's amazing how the matriarchy took the car keys. I just wanna build, take a trip in the RV. Turn into a zombie or get caught in a tsunami. Learn about the lessons on talk from Marcus Garvey. It's amazing how the matriarchy took the car keys. I just wanna build, take a trip in the RV.
Scales.
You're now listening to 13 Revolution Radio.
Turn me off. Cover your ears. Because you don't want to hear this kind of truth.
You ain't got time to be playing around. You got to learn all you possibly can to make it in this world.
We're exposing this thing today.
It's not the money that buys you a future. It's your skills that buy you a future.
And we ain't got no time to fool around with people who are just playing at this.
And now, here's your host, Minister Dawood Muhammad.
Salaam alaikum. In the name of Allah, King, the Person, Master Al Muhammad, I bear witness there's no God but Allah. I bear witness that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is the last and greatest messenger. We are the 13 Revolutionary Family. Can never thank Allah enough for my teacher, my leader, the Honorable Minister Linette. I greet you once again, brothers and sisters, with the greeting words, peace of Assalamu alaikum. It is my pleasure, my humble honor to be on these esteemed airways of Blog Talk Radio again to bring the message of revolution, reconstruction, or renaissance, and to continue to instill the idea of land, infrastructure, and nationhood. I'm so grateful to Allah to be here. This is my second to the last show for a while, simply because I'm just going through a situation in which I'm kind of tired and I need to recharge. And, you know, I've had some different conversations with certain people today and made me realize that I was at a place that I didn't even realize I was at, to be honest with you. And so, therefore, I'm going to do the show tonight. I'm going to do my show on Wednesday, and then I'm just going to disappear for, like, maybe 2 months and come back because, just, you know, life gets to the point where sometimes you have family, career, work, business, whatever it may be. And when that happens, you know, I learned that Blog Talk is like the least high priority for me. And so it's something that I can always come back to when I feel like it. It's a passion. And I, you know, I would say above and beyond all things, brothers and sisters, for me, when my show becomes less art and it becomes more information and just dispensing of it, then that I don't need to be on here. Because you got way too many people on here just dispensing information. For me, 13 Revolution is an experience. It's a musical experience. It's a movie clip experience. It's an experience in poetry. It's an experience in lyrical development. And it also is an experience where I try my best to use various different media to make you think, paint a picture in your mind, even to the color of the show that I may want you to see. And so for myself, I don't think that I have been there in a while, and it just makes me want to take a break. But I am very happy and honored to have my Nana with me today to deal with some issues. I mean, I reached out to Sister and said that, you know, I wanted to have a show with her, and I rescheduled a couple of times. I really hope that she forgives me. It's just that my life has gotten so bogged down. It's not her. It's just me, myself. And, you know, life just comes at you very fast, brothers and sisters, and you may overpromise and may overcommit. And I guess the secret to success is always underpromise and over-deliver. But for me, moving at 100 miles per hour, sometimes I overpromise and then don't deliver in the end. And so, therefore, what we want to talk about today, I think, is a very important topic, Black African acceptance. And I want to give you the monologue and then bring my sister in to give as much time as I can for her to deal with the subject. And it says, my dear sister, Nana Elder, Abena Africa, will return to 13 Revolution to discuss and break down acceptance from a Black perspective. She will deal with Bobby Christina Brown's situation and how it relates to our mental struggle as a people. And so with that, brothers and sisters, I am grateful to Allah to bring in my sister Abena Africa, for maybe the fourth or fifth time. Sister, how are you doing today? Hotep.
Hotep, my brother Minister Daoud, I am well. Thank you for asking, and thank you for having me again here with you all at 13, what is it, Revolution?
Yes.
Revolution, 13 Revolution Radio. Yes.
I'm okay. I won't say I'm fine. I won't say I'm good. I'm okay. I had a pretty shocking meeting when somebody pretty much confronted me about my disposition, and I didn't even realize I was there, to be honest with you. I think that's usually how it happens with me, where like I don't even realize I'm acting in a certain way or doing something. You know, and the person was just like, this is how you've been acting, and this is what people have been saying. And I was like, word? You know, I just realized I need to slow down, man, because before it gets to the point where I start causing more damage than good, I just think that I need to, you know, slow down. So I'll just say I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
How are you today?
I understand, and, you know, I can just say I'm okay. I'm alive, I'm well, and I'm being accounted for. I'm here just for today and just for this moment, despite all of the experiences, and in particular those that are extremely confusing and painful, here we still are, and we do the best that we can with what we have. So, you know, I did hear you at the opening and understand the need for the changes, and when things happen, things happen. Life continues to happen for us here, you know, in a murder curse, it seems, certainly for us as a people. And like I said, we do the best we can. And, So I'm, you know, like yourself, dealing with many things that are difficult to accept. And placed in a position to accept it. It's either that or continue to sort of be stuck in a particular place that I don't want to be in my spirit.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm actually gonna come back to that towards the end because there's some stuff that I would like to ask you, you know, for personal reasons, but would probably help the audience. But you know, we'll have time at the end to ask that. So, let me. I guess you know, it's been a while since you've been on the show. So please tell people who you are, and just give them a little bit of background on yourself.
Okay. Well, I'll go ahead and do my little introduction that I haven't done live for a good while yet. I am Abana Africa, the recovering African who is still culturally enslaved in America, and I am a representative from the Voices in the Margins. I am true to the cause of African liberation via unification and utilizing the tool of healthy and effective communication. I am a trauma queen, traumatized traumatologist, trauma queen, and queen of trauma, that is understanding trauma and traumatic stress, what it is and how it has and continues to work in the lives of African descendants. And let me for a moment go ahead and give a warning. I do have a cat, Miss Pearl, my black cat. She's very demanding. She's very vocal, highly communicative as well. And will kind of let you know when she wants something. So because I'm right now I'm stroking her and rubbing her and scratching her, she's okay. Yet I'm going to have to stop this. And so I want to give folks warning. She's going to let you know when I have stopped giving her what she wants at the moment. So you may hear her crying for attention.
Isn't that how people are too?
Exactly, very much so. You know, at least it's been my experience. We have been supported and taught and supported and encouraged with speaking out for what we want, and when we need something. And, you know, it's like if you don't know something, the message was always you better ask somebody, you know, and that it was okay to ask questions and to ask for and let people know when you need something. Yet, over time, what I have found is that really is ineffective, and what you get in return, or certainly what I've experienced more often than not, and given the vast majority of people I have talked to in the process of helping them to heal from experiences and make changes in their lives, what you find is that it is not okay to ask for help. It is not safe to let folks know that you have a need. And it is just not safe to open your mouth and cry or call out for help, especially not being black.
Exactly.
In America, you know, and it's not even okay to open your mouth and speak your piece and speak your truth, share your ideals, your vision, your knowledge, you know, be loud and proud about it. That's not okay, and that's not safe, being a person of African descent in the system that we exist in now. And instead, what happens is that you become a target for someone's intent to harm you because they want to shut you up, they want to sit you down, they want you to go away and fix yourself by yourself, you know, so to speak, or with somebody else. And
you're weak if you don't.
And if you don't, then you will be labeled and further victimized and harmed by being falsely labeled and accused based on somebody else's bold.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Their stuff, their sick intent to harm. And it's intentional. And that is what we get. That is what is happening. And so for me, it's about, okay, so I must accept that. And that's what I suppose is really meant when they taught me very early in my life that you, quote, unquote, can't change the system. And what I recognize the system being really is this way of thinking. It's just a particular way of thinking about situations in life, and it's the way of thinking that we have been taught to think.
Right.
Based on, you know, what we have taught stuff means and so forth, and we've been taught to think in a way that supports these type of behaviors continuing, and we continue seemingly to deny the origins of it and what it, what it's really about and what the outcome is, how in fact how hurtful it is as opposed to being helpful. It's like we really just deny the fact that the way of thinking and behaving that, that people engage in is actually hurtful. And it, and it, and it's not helpful, and it's misrepresentative. It's you know, it's inconsistent with what's supposed to happen or what we've been taught. And
now,
the reality
is
like, yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry, but because it, it, much of what you're saying, which I agree with, brings something that comes to mind about you that I learned a long time ago that I continue to remember in times like this. Now, I remember you was talking about you made a trip to the motherland and you saw a sage. I forget exactly what the proper terminology was, but it was an older woman, you know, of the craft, and she said to you that you are a seer and no one will help you. Can you please explain once again what that means?
Yeah, that was Nana Effia Kambone, the wife of Brother Kambone, the mother of... Obatele Kambone, maybe known, does a lot of teaching on the online African languages and so forth. Yet, and his father wrote, I believe, the book "The Last Black Man Standing" or "The Last Man Standing," and got into some trouble way back when Katrina was it Katrina, one of those major events where they really show themselves for who they are towards us. Yet. Yeah, she just standing in the marketplace there, she just turned to me and said, "You are a seer, and therefore no one will help you." And what it means to be a seer spiritually is, you know, and it's what I've learned about myself that when I practiced or when I was active in the Christian religion and you took courses and, you know, so forth, it looked at your spiritual gifts. And what it, it revealed for me is that I was, I had a gift of discernment. And discernment and seeing is spiritually, it's the same thing, the same process. Yet being able to be spiritually attuned, I suppose, and is what I accepted as the more I accept myself and recognize what I see and the visions that I see and the meanings, you know, that's connected to it or whatever. Yet, but because I was a seer, no one would help me. And what I recognize is that I am... Because I am able to, I don't know, see inside as a clinician, as a therapist, as a mental health, you know, therapist, clinician, one of the things that we do in our practice is to help people see beyond the armor, the surface of what we present to the world, to see beyond our shields that we wear and we carry. And by listening, you know, simply having conversations, asking particular questions, and understanding the feelings, and understanding feelings is really what it's about, you know, as a therapist, is helping people connect those thoughts and those feelings. It's being able to be in touch with the feelings. Those are not what people really give. They will tell you, "I feel like such and such and such," but what they're really revealing is a thought. The feeling that's connected to what they feel is maybe anger, it may be sadness, it may be joy. I just think such and such and such. But the feeling attached to that is anger. The thought is that person is a very bad person, and they should be punished for what I feel like they should be punished. Well, you think they should be punished. You feel anger at what they did, yet. That is something that, you know, we rarely separate and recognize the difference between what you're thinking and what you're feeling. So as a therapist, that's one of the things that we do, and we're able to be in tune and in touch with people's feeling states. And, you know, in the process of therapy, you help people bring that together. So on the spiritual side, as a seer, you know, I can see beyond the shields that people present. And more, right. I think, than that, more than just my clinical background and what people may have learned to do. For me, it's just a spiritual gift. It's something that I've always been able to do. I've always been able to connect with people and other spiritual energy wherever place they are, whether it's a child, whether it's an adult, whether it's a male, female, an elder, a young person, in between. The different, you know, different cultural styles, you know, just being able to listen and tune in and join with people where they are, yet I've always been gifted in that, you know, and being able to see, and, you know, I can assess the situation pretty quickly, you know, listening
but
to
why?
People
why?
And...
Why won't people
help me? And
yeah.
What I recognize and why is because it's very intimidating, and that's been a word people have used to describe me over time. Intimidating because people do not expect to be seen. People wear a lot of body armor to hide those very painful places in our world and in our lives experience. And if you come across somebody who could see despite all the work you did to cover up, then you might want to stay away from that person because they can see beyond all your filth. So it's intimidating and it's scary for people. And a lot of different ways, you know, some people are very excited yet tentative and will still stay away because it's just too overwhelming that somebody can actually really see me and know, and the feeling of that is just so overwhelming, so they stay away. Yet people will not stay because then I begin to see them, and they don't want to be seen, and they have not accepted, and then it goes right to that thing that we, you know, came to talk about, which is acceptance and how it's how it affects our lives when we don't do it, you know, on this sort of grand scale. So, you know, because people have not, because they're still hiding those parts of themselves, they haven't even accepted it for themselves. So that's another reason why they will not help me, because they don't want their stuff to be seen. They don't want it to be touched. And being with me and being too close to me for too long puts them in that very uncomfortable position to see themselves because of who I am and what I am and what I have to offer. I don't even really have to say a whole lot to people. They can see themselves because I can see myself very clear. So I become a mirror for others. And I believe that's another aspect that becomes very overwhelming and very scary. And it's a process that people have not, you know, are still not, you know, ready to take that step to begin to spend time and look at themselves and become comfortable with seeing who they are and become more comfortable with accepting what they see.
Okay. Well, I'm going to read the definition of acceptance. And since we've already pretty much opened this up wide, I think it would be easy for us to go on into it. So the dictionary says acceptance is the act of taking or receiving something offered. Acceptance is also favorable reception, approval. But acceptance can also be the act of assenting or believing, the fact or state of being accepted or acceptable. So please explain to us the benefit or the detriment as Black people of acceptance.
Well, let's start with the detriment, and we'll end on the upbeat. How about that? You know,
okay.
So the detriment of not accepting a reality, an event, whatever, you know, whether it's on a very small scale and very personal to something that happened, you know, for somebody in their life, or whether it's on a broader scale for us as a people and where we are, you know, and looking at where we are, how we got there, so forth. You know, without acceptance, there can be no action, and or the action that is taken is not likely to get you where you want to go because of the lack of acceptance of the reality of what you're dealing with. The recovery demands there's three A's, awareness, acceptance, and then action. So you must be first aware and to be aware of something. If you're working on a puzzle or you're cleaning a room or whatever, you have to be aware of all the tasks that must be attended to within that function, you know, that job. And then
right.
So it's becoming aware of that. And then it's about acceptance. Okay, in order to clean this room, I'm going to have to do X, Y, and Z. I may not feel like it. I may not want to. Yet, if I want the room to look the way that I'm envisioning, then I'm going to have to do this, 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 and that. And I just must accept that. If I reject it and don't do it and attempt to, you know, go it around it, you know, it may take me a little longer. It may, you know, add some additional work, and or it may not be the exact way that I wanted it to come out, yet I may accept or settle for if I don't want to, you know, deal with a couple of factors in the situation. So I use the room, cleaning a room or straightening a room, but it could be any situation that you are attempting to take some action against. You know, or towards. You must take
right.
into account and accept the whole of it. And when you don't accept the totality of your situation, then it's likely that parts of it are going to be unattended.
Oh.
And if that happens, depending on what it is you are working to achieve, it is likely to have, you know, a negative outcome.
Oh.
Or it puts you, you know, at higher risk for that. The benefit then of accepting the situation for what it is, it's like gives you a clearer path to what your options are for action and what you're going to do intuition.
Sure.
You have a total picture. You're making a real informed decision. And that's
right.
the benefit of accepting. To promote the action that you desire.
Right. Okay. We're moving now. And this is, if you're just tuning in, this is my dear Nana Elder, Abena Africa, and, you know, has not skipped a beat or missed a word since he's been gone before. And we thank her for coming back on and dealing with these subjects. And so, therefore, knowing what the benefit and the detriment is now, how does acceptance, because you talked about traumatology and trauma and things like that, how does acceptance help us deal with traumatic events?
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing with that is in order to heal, there's just a couple of basics. And the very basic step is to engage in the process of healing from trauma and traumatic events is to remember and tell the truth about them.
Mm-hmm.
Remembering and telling the truth about terrible prerequisites to restoring social order and healing individual victims. And that's a direct quote from Dr. Judith Herman, who wrote her seminal work in 1994 entitled Trauma and Recovery from Political Violence to from Domestic Terror to Political Violence, yet looking at
right.
within, you know, and without. Yet those are two prerequisites. You must remember and tell the truth about terrible events. So in order to heal and to begin the process of healing, that has to happen. In order for, and so in so doing, puts you in a place to begin to accept what happened. That's
sure.
crucial because, you know, depending on the trauma that was experienced and just by default, because it was a traumatic event, we already know that it was out of the norm. It was an abnormal experience, so to speak, that caused harm to a person where they lost something of themselves. And more often than not, the trauma that people experience of human are based on somebody else's intent to harm. It's the shit, traumatic stress of the human intentional type. Somebody intended to take from you. Somebody intended to harm you. Your mom said, I'm going to whoop you. You're going to feel this. I want to hurt you in order to get you to do something that I want some way that's going to benefit me, I'm going to hurt you. And that is the type of traumatic experiences that the vast majority of us have on a daily basis, the intentional type. And that's notwithstanding the other types of traumatic stress, unintentional trauma that comes from accidents and things, yet people still lose, and it's still very painful to think about. You may have lost a loved one in a car accident, and you may have been a passenger as well. So for you, the loss was of your loved one and maybe some part of your own physical function or not. Yet there was a tremendous loss. That brings up a whole lot of intense pain, a lot of sadness, and a lot of anger. And those are feelings that we don't want to feel. Yet those are feelings that if and when we do not allow ourselves to feel, we will get us in trouble because we are denying that it hurt. We are denying our body's need to release that pain through shedding of tears. We are denying our spirit's contact with another spirit through a hug when we are hurting. And we say, I'm okay, I don't need anything. When in fact, our spirits are grieving and could benefit from other spiritual energy wrapping around it and feeding it, reviving it, holding it, not allowing it to fall out.
Okay.
That makes some sense.
It makes a lot of sense. It does make, you know, and this is something like, I know that we're going to fly off the rails a couple of times here, but it's just, and this is why I don't give you like a whole lot of questions, because I know that once you start talking, we're going going in different directions with it, but still stay on the topic. Now, this, you came on my show years ago, and we cleared the air about auditing. Now, for you, when you talk about what you just talked about, that reminds me of some of the stuff I hear when they talk about auditing and going clear. Now, I know that that takes a whole other show and a whole other hour and a half to explain how fraudulent that whole thing is, but isn't that kind of like, okay, well, I guess it's a two-part question. Isn't that kind of like when, you know, that way that they would manipulate people by getting you to accept your past through this fraudulent process of auditing, number one, and number two, and this is more, I guess, damaging to certain people who are manipulators, isn't this kind of how people manipulate you to get something from you, like a man manipulates a woman or a woman manipulates a man by trying to get you to work through your problems or emotions through acceptance, and then basically once you get that trust of them and you give over your will, then they take advantage of what you've been trying to protect?
Absolutely. You know, in both instances with the auditing, because that's what I had always said to them and to the one sister I used to talk with who was going through this, the process. He was a, as I'm listening, like, well, this, you know, I understood it automatically what they were talking about with this whole clearing process, yet the way they intend to do it is just, you know, outrageous. This is a process. Recovery is a process. It's not an event. And with the auditing, they profess that you can come in and by hooking you up to the little electrical monitor thing and going through the questions and having you just sort of like simply recite the trauma, as a way to sort of clear your mind of it. Process of therapy and what I'm talking about, you may cry, you may grieve, but your mind doesn't clear. It doesn't erase the memory. You just reattach the feeling to the memory so that it flows differently in your mind. you know, whereby what they're talking about clearing, it's almost as if you could clear you of those awful memories, and that's not going to happen, and that's not what you really want to happen. And then the way they profess to do it, and then, you know, sort of 10 or maybe somebody might take 5 sessions or somebody 10 sessions to just simply talk about it, and they hook you up with the electrode. It's like that whole process is just is what is out of context. And it is how people have information and then use it in a way that's hurtful. Sure. Now, I would say this, and I understand, and I believe, you know, one of the things I understand about why it has been so difficult for us Black folks to feel comfortable with going to therapists, and what has always been said and what I had always heard growing up, you know, and listening in the hood when we talk about therapy. The real danger for us in Black folks has been allowing people to, quote unquote, get in your head, you know, because a therapist can sort of, quote unquote, get in your head and sort of read you and feel you. So that when if somebody does that and then they're doing it in a way to use the information to hurt you, is dangerous. Because if you can get in my head and begin to move stuff around in a way that it's not supposed to be and it's going to cause me harm, then, of course, I don't want you in there. However, if you're going to go in there and do it in a way that I want and that's helpful, then, okay, let's do it. However, we've not been able to trust white folks since forever. And we have extended our trust to them since forever, and they have evidently and consistently used it in a way to hurt us. And so now we do not want to, you know, go that well, and certainly not with something that at the core of who we are, our center, our spirit. Why would I open that up to you again when I know that you're going to muck it up? And I will say for real, in total agreement, that is exactly what they have done with this whole thing called mental health and the whole mental health, behavioral health field. They get in our heads and then they use it in a way to hurt us. They use it in a way to manipulate us into continuing to think and behave as if we are them. And that's been a problem, and it's still a problem. So I understand and I can appreciate why another reason folks of African descent have a difficult time with me because of my background, because of my profession, because they're very afraid of it, because people have gotten in our heads and they've done it in a way that has been hurtful and not helpful. And therefore, we have not been able to accept and been able to begin to trust other folks of African descent who are in this profession, yet who desire to truly help. And like I said, I'm true to the cause of our African liberation via unification and utilizing the tool of healthy and effective communication. It's important for us to come together. It's important to do it in a healthy and a helpful way. The program of Racism Non-Anonymous that I designed as a self-help program demands honesty as well. So I'm all about practicing what I preach and teach. And, you know, all I can do at this point is show people. You know, I can show and prove. However, if you want something for yourself, then you'll have to come and let me know. And you'll have to open your mouth and we can begin, you know, that process. And then it would be up to the person then to tell me, have I been helpful or have I been hurtful? And I'm pretty sure that for the vast majority of people I have worked with and worked for, if you were to ask them the question, they will tell you that I have helped them. Because that is what I'm here to do.
Well, the question is, it's not even a question with me because you helped me. So I don't have to ask nobody.
Okay. Right? Okay.
All I got to do is ask myself.
Can I get a witness?
You know what I mean?
You know, you say witness over here. Okay. That's right. So,
you know,
because
you know, that's. Mm-hmm. But, you know, well, there were certain things that I definitely needed to accept. And, you know, I guess a lot of times, you know, again, it's not like, you know, people would say, oh, you went to a shrink or something like that, you know, and you just happen to be a friend of mine, and we just happen to have conversations in which I pulled upon your expertise because humility, you know, caused me to say, okay, she has studied this, she is a master at this,
And this is something that I have not mastered, so why not lean on the master? It's like I was having this ongoing argument with this dude on Facebook today because, and it really, I should have pulled out within the second sentence, but it, you know, somebody posted this picture and it talked about a microphone, and this microphone is a high-tech microphone that white folks use. Basically, it locates an area that a gunshot was taken, and it, you know, it can tell you where it came from, and usually there's video in that area or cameras in that area that correspond with the location. The thing about it is it's only for gunshots. So I know this because I'm in the security industry, and I get the emails, you know what I'm saying? I get the brochures and magazines, and I use this stuff. So a brother had posted this, and I came on there. I didn't say there was nothing to worry about. I just said, listen, don't be alarmed. These things are nowhere near where they need to be to the point where they can just spy on you. And his brother came on there, and he was like, oh, why are you defending the oppressor? And you know what I'm saying? It just happens, and that happens. And I'm like, dude, like, listen, I program, design, and install this stuff for a living. Do you know? I mean, do you do that? Well, I'm involved in law, and, you know, we use microphones, so it's the same kind of microphone. And that's when I realized, okay, one of us is a fool, and if I keep arguing, then both of us would be a fool. So I just think that sometimes you have to be humble and recognize somebody else's expertise. And if you have somebody that's a friend or in your community that deals with mental health, then you should talk to them from time to time. Because if we bear witness that living in the system of racism, white supremacy, it damages us mentally and spiritually, then how the hell are you going to turn around and say, I don't need any kind of help dealing with this mentally, when you don't even know you've been damaged sometimes?
Exactly. And that's the thing, because people have not accepted that they've been damaged. And they can't accept it if they won't even stop and really talk about it slowly and talk about exactly what happened and really work to be honest and go deeper than one or two word responses. Like, you know, oh, it's all right. I was good. Well, see, my mother taught me blah, 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 and all these other things. This is not what I asked you. You know, stop for a minute.
Right.
Slow down. Breathe. Now, what do you feel when you think about that? Take yourself back there. And that's the thing that people, you know, have a difficult time, because it's uncomfortable. It doesn't feel so good. And until we begin to allow ourselves to feel those feelings, and we can be in control of it. You know, it's like allow ourselves to not feel so good. It's like, duh, well, what are you saying, Abner? We don't feel so good now in this system. I have to do this. I'm trying to do that. This shit don't feel good. I don't want to stop and think about stuff that happened 10, 15, 20 years ago that doesn't feel good. You know, yet it's like, well, when you are able to do that, then you will be able to more successfully manage the shit that's going on now.
Right.
And use those feelings in a way that is more helpful, as opposed to, because the more you deny the feeling and keep it shut down, you have work. You spiritually, you have work, mental and spiritual work that is going on to keep it there.
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes the other detriment, because you have to keep it. And because every time some new shit comes along that matches the feelings, some new shit that pisses you off, some new shit that hurts and feels bad and sad, it joins with the old shit that's already in there, and it becomes bigger. And then you have more work to do to lock down the sadness, to lock in the anger, to lock in the fear. You know, it just builds. It really doesn't go away, and you wonder why people snap seemingly for something small.
Exactly.
It was just those small things. You make a mountain out of a molehill. It was really the other way around, I think. It wasn't that, you know, it was like that thing just, you know, added to the molehill, the mountain that's already there. That little molehill, you know, just created the peak of the mountain that was already there. And that is what explains why people just go off these little small things, so to speak.
Right.
And that's just one little tiny example of all of the behaviors that people engage in, and all of those things are designed to feel, have you feel better.
Well, I mean, we could talk forever on this particular stuff, but there's two issues that I want to get to you with, so we're just going to have to, you know, when I come back, we're going to have to do a two-hour show so we can really get into it, because this is, but see, what the people don't realize is this is kind of like the conversation that you and I have off air.
Right.
The same kind of conversation.
Right. About that.
Okay, so
all the time.
Number one. So just to bring context to a situation that everybody knows about, which is the upcoming, unfortunately, untimely demise or return to the ancestors, however we want to say it, of Whitney Houston's daughter being Bobby Christina. Now, I was talking to you about this, and you was explaining it to me how she did not go through a certain acceptance. And, you know, I had this clip that I wanted to play, but I couldn't get it in time, because I was so busy, because she was on Oprah's show talking about she accepted the death of her mother, but I don't really feel like she accepted it. So if you could just break down yourself how you saw that, how it relates to acceptance, and how that in the micro deals with the acceptance and in the macro that we as Black people don't have ourselves or have not engaged in.
Okay, so let's see how we approach this. Is we have been talking about Sister Bobby and what's going on with her. And so we just take it from the point and the premise that, okay, yes, Bobby Christina attempted suicide. She attempted to take her own life, and maybe some say she was successful in it, given her current status, and that therefore, if she is attempting suicide, then therefore that would seem that she has not accepted something about her mother's passing.
Right.
So, it's always about the both and.
Mm-hmm.
And she has accepted it. And she's accepted it to the point where she has determined, I'm going there with her. Wherever she believes that she went, but she's accepted the fact that she's not here on this planet, and therefore I'm going to kill, quote unquote, end my life here on this planet in hopes that I'm going to go to wherever she is. It seems that there is acceptance. Now, what we are taught to accept when people pass away is that we are to continue our lives here without them being here with us physically, and that we must accept that it was their time to go, yet it is not our time to go. And more often when people sort of commit suicide and they're saying, well, I'm deciding that I'm going. And then that's the other part about the whole notion of acceptance when suicide is a factor, you know, because the whole message, the whole Christian belief is that we do not have the right to end our lives on this planet.
Sure.
And because that has been accepted, right?
Come on.
Been accepted, then anytime anybody takes a move to take their own lives, then that person automatically is quote unquote wrong. And they have not accepted, and they are seen as the person who has not accepted the fact that the other person needed to go, and it was their time to go, yet it's not your time to go, and that you do not get to decide when it's time for you to go.
Right.
You just have to stay here and live with the aftermath of what that person left for you in your life. Then that brings us to a next thing with Bobby Christina. When we think about the celebrity status that her mother had, how we understand her life story to have been, and what that life story has meant for Bobby being her daughter.
Right.
So number one, Bobby grew up in a family and an environment, well, like everybody else, covered with addiction and addictive behaviors. So she's an adult child of an addict, and she was a child of a family, you know, a family addiction.
Nobody talks about.
And
right.
Hmm. Right.
Said, which nobody talks about.
Nobody talks about what the effect of that all that stuff is. You know, we all live with it all the time, though, and we wonder. You know, what's wrong with us? Well, you know,
right.
You know, might want to consider some of these things and what that meant for her. So she had a lot of work, emotional work for herself to do, and there's work to accept that reality in order to successfully go through a process to recover from experiences like that. And by the way, just for the record, growing up in a family where addiction is prevalent is an adverse childhood experience.
Yes.
It is trauma.
Yes.
It is traumatic.
Yes.
It is traumatic stress. And a child grows up with traumatic stress when you are living with addiction. So then not only the addiction, their family was very well known to the world. So your life is like an open book. There's always with the reporters and the entertainment and the celebrity and upkeep of appearances, you know, that has to be made. You have to maintain a way to manage your income and your money and your wealth. And so this is a big, heavy responsibility for a young woman of her age, because she was
right.
only in her 20s or less when her mother passed away, right?
Yes,
so we're
yes,
looking
yes.
at a young adult with sure. all of this to deal with emotionally and mentally. And that's a whole lot of stuff to accept that she's going to be able to do that in the environment she was in. And I'm not even sure how I got down this rabbit hole and where I'm going with that.
Putting
it all together and saying it out loud.
Please keep going. You're doing it. You're definitely going it because there's so much. The thing for me that's very important is I want people to see the whole picture. I don't want people to look at it and say, oh, Whitney was ratchet and Bobby was ratchet and they both deserve to die. And, you know, that's how the devil is going to paint the picture. And
right.
that's how we as a people are going to pick, you know, so the picture that you're painting is different and it brings it home to people, many of us who have that experience. Because, listen, I grew up in an addictive home. Like, my dad was an alcoholic and my mom, you know, used marijuana. So it was like, I mean, she was addicted to it. So be that as it may, you know, then they had issues and situations with each other that, you know, one could argue could stem from the addictions that they had. And like you said, an addictive childhood or growing up in an addictive, it's an adverse childhood. And the funny thing about it was that I was recommended. Remember when I was in Philly and we both went to Black and Noble and we went to see that gentleman that was there that day? Well, he, in some of his videos, recommends that you read the book, The Bell Curve. And so, finally, I bought the book, and I'm reading it. I was reading it today. And it's just like, you know, there's so much technology in this book, but one of the things he tries to talk about, the author of the book, is he tries to make it seem as though everything can be solved if you have a higher IQ. Like, women marry and stay married better if they have a higher IQ. And, you know, children are not born out of wedlock if you have a higher IQ and all this other stuff. And so, you know, there's a lot of propaganda and racist garbage in there. However, when you look at the adverse of it, one of the things he does talk about is the damaging effect of addicted households and how that affects a lot of different things.
Exactly. So, yeah, there's always something in it that's meaningful and useful, and they do tell the truth about. And although I've never read it, you know, I've heard the stories and studied about the bell curve and know, you know, the racist connotations of it all and so forth and how they have used that, you know, with the whole, you know, IQ scoring and then standardized tests.
Right.
Based off of that stuff. And, you know, there's a lot of debunking of that at this point where it seems that many colleges' considerations of doing away with some of the standardized testing. because of the detriment, and is interested in the public school system doing more standardized testing to, you know, the systems that they set up in the last few years, all based on standardized tests that they already know are hurtful and do not truly evaluate a child's capabilities, knowledge, or understanding of things. So disgusting what we have to live with, yet the adversity, yes, there are adverse experiences, you know, growing up in those situations.
Right. Right.
And that is just one little piece of it, you know, of the experiences that we have.
Right. Okay, so,
you know,
I guess we're running out. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so I was getting back to Bobby. It's like, so she had that to deal with, and then, you know, all of the other stuff. I mean, because even having no money or having a whole lot of money, you're still going to be both at the opposite ends of the same thing. You have to do a lot of work to manage what you're living with, and it has an effect on you. Oftentimes, it's not healthy. So she had a lot of stuff to accept at a very
right.
young age, and in order to take appropriate action for herself, there's parts of that of acceptance that's just too overwhelming, and who can really do it? And certainly, you know, you need to be in an environment that's going to support you to do it. When you need to have some surgery to repair some significant internal damage, they take you out of the street into a safe room. And when you recover, you're in a safe environment, free from infection and so forth. And
yes,
you know, you just don't go out and do surgery on the middle of Broad Street or any major, you know, highway or outdoors at all. And we sit and hold each other responsible and accountable to do this type of work, you know, wherever we are, and that's really not going to help. You do need a safe place. You need a recovery room. You need a recovery zone to go to do that work, and she wasn't in that, and she wasn't in an environment that would have supported that. And because she probably could not accept all of what had happened in her life, and then this event happened for her, as I noted, shortly thereafter, the airing of the HBO production or movie about Bobby,
yes, ma'am.
About Whitney and Bobby's life. And she was exposed to that and began to have to see, you know, her parents and her life in a whole different view, and probably heard things and began to put things together. You know, because each time we read a book, you learn something new out of it. You can read the same book 10 times and get something new each time and add a piece to the puzzle. And I think that it added some pieces to a puzzle for her that was just already too overwhelming and that she was not willing to accept. So she threw it off and took herself, you know, out of here. She said, no, I'm not accepting it. I'm not living this life with all of this to carry. And so, therefore, the action that she took was to leave.
And you know, I got to add on a question / a statement. The funny thing about, I never even really thought about that. The funny thing about it is that sometimes when people pass, depending on your mental level of growth and development, you may be ready or you may not be ready to see and hear certain things. And that movie coming out, I never even really thought about that. Like, there definitely had to be some things that were said she didn't know. There had to be some things revealed that she never wanted to deal with. There had to be certain things that she mentally set. Because, you know, the thing is that your mom, your dad, your, you know, a leader, an elder, people that you look up to, generally you will mask off certain parts of their life because you're looking at the good and you're looking at the benefit. You don't want to look at that. And if you're seeing a movie after they pass, you have to deal with that now because there's a period to their life. It's over. And a movie comes out and reveals this and reveals that. Now you have to accept all of that. And maybe there were certain things that were in this movie that she, you know, had not accepted, and finally it just brought it home to her. It's like, I never really even thought about that. We all go through that, though.
Right. Exactly. And then maybe she wasn't attempting to kill herself, yet her drug use may have just been over the top at that time because
right.
of all of this stuff maybe coming up and she just not wanting to feel, because that's what drug use and addiction is about anyway. I don't want
right.
to feel certain things, or I want to feel something different.
Right.
And so that's why I said the more we don't address the feelings, the more work we have to do to keep them at bay. And when people use drugs and or alcohol to keep stuff at bay, it takes more drugs and alcohol over time to keep your stuff at bay. It's just going to take more over time. Because each
sure.
time you do it, you're creating more pain and angst and anguish for yourself that gets added to the pile, and then you need more substance to hold it down.
Right,
and
right.
so it may have just gotten overboard for her, and maybe she wasn't attempting to hurt herself, and maybe she did quote-unquote OD, and maybe there was some foul play going on, because there are still
sure.
whole lots of unanswered questions about Bobby's situation and so many other factors and other people involved in it that suggests that it really was not her attempting to take herself out of here. Maybe somebody else was intending to cause her some harm.
Right.
Or
right.
some other personal gain or benefit that they would have gotten.
Hmm.
And that's a terrible thing to have to accept. Yet somebody has accepted that potential theory somewhere and are working the case, so to speak. You know, and so that's how this, you know, comes at all these different angles and different ways of looking at a situation. There's just so many ways of looking at it, and so many parts of it to consider. Some pieces
sure.
you will accept and keep, and some pieces may come up that you reject right away.
Right, right. Wow.
Yet if you believe that it some things that's necessary, we reject it, even though it's something that we need. And I think that's the piece where, as a people, we are at this point now. And one of the primary things, and this is true for Bobby and ties her experience together with our experience as I see it, if I just look at the addiction as a major problem, and how many of us as a people, one, our addiction to European culture. We just aren't there as a people. And admit that we are, you know, we live in a system based on racist, white supremacist thinking and behaving, and we have been programmed in that system, accepted. The bottom line, everything that we think we know, for the most part, is based off a European cultural story, and that is not our story. Accept it.
Right.
For what it is, you know.
Right.
You know, if we just begin to breathe and allow ourselves to swallow that very bitter pill, you know,
sure.
and begin to think about, okay, and allow ourselves to feel what will come up when we take that pill, and then begin to crap some of the stuff out and figure out where do we want to go next, really, what do we really want, you know, as a people. And at this point, I've accepted, you know, looking at this whole systemic piece, that the vast majority of people are not there, and they're not able to get there. Too hurt, they're too entrenched in the system as it is, and they're not able to move, and I have to accept that. And then I have to accept that I'm sort of standing here alone, as the Nana suggested to me, as a seer, no one will help me. Therefore, I'm over here without any help, and I'm learning to accept myself in this position, and do some things different with my spirit, with my energy, you know, in a way that A, benefits me, and B, causes no harm to others, particularly other Africans, for sure.
Well, sis, we done ran out of time, and we could go on forever.
Okay,
this was a
right?
fantastic discussion.
and you are as sharp as you've ever been. I think, you know, I really thank God that you came on this show today, and I thank you for giving us some of your time and being patient with my rescheduling. But I don't believe that anything is coincidence, because the power and the energy in this particular show, more likely than not, maybe it wasn't going to happen on those other days. You know, but when I come back, you know you have a spot on 13 Revolution, because you bring it like nobody else does when it comes to your field and what you talk about. And so, therefore, I hope, and I'll be talking to you, you know, during some time to time. And when I come back, you will definitely, you know, hopefully you will bless us again. But until then, thank you very much for coming on.
Again, thank you for having me. And anytime that you call, I will be here, if that is the will of the ancestors, for sure. So I appreciate
much,
every opportunity. I have a whole lot to say.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Hotel.
All right.
Have a good night.
Hotel. You stay safe. All right.